Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzschreiber, your host. On today's show, following up on a topic we've discussed before, software-defined networking, building the internet of the future, and building an internet that is smart, that is self-healing, that learns. And we talked about this on a previous episode, Software-Defined Networking 101. I encourage you to go back and listen to that for a primer. But today we're going to dig deeper and talk about how software-defined networking goes with big data and how the two could be complementary in the same way that peanut butter and jelly are. So joining me to discuss this is Mazen Gilbert, Assistant Vice President of Intelligent Systems and Platform Research at AT&T Labs. Mazen, thanks for joining the show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Evan, for inviting me.
So Mazen, before we get into the big data aspect, I know you've had to describe complex topics in layman's terms before. So just give listeners a recap of what software-defined networking is and how best they can, you know, relate to it in the real world.
Software-defined network is really a network transformation initiative that we at AT&T have been in that journey for the past 2-3 years. If you take a step back, Evan, and you think about the volume of traffic that has been on our network for the past 7-8 years, that volume of traffic has grown by 150,000%. And looking ahead till 2020, we expect our traffic to increase by a factor of at least 10 from what we are seeing it today. We're no longer in the old world where it's the voice world, where we could anticipate and predict traffic month by month. The traffic is growing exponentially. So moving to a software-defined network allows us to increase capacity, allow us to manage the scale and the growth of this traffic in that exponential form. In an essence, what software-defined network is basically separating our network into a commodity hardware and a software intelligent layer, so that the software intelligent layer allows us to manage and control the devices on our network and allow us to import commodity hardware, cloud hardware, that we could easily replace over time.
And it's easy for listeners to take for granted. You know, if you've had an iPhone since 2007 and you've always used it and you've had a data plan and it just keeps working, it might, you know, listeners could be forgiven for maybe not realizing just what it takes to keep up with the exploding demand and traffic. And it's really being driven by video. And I mean, a shocking statistic is that I think Netflix accounts for about 33% of all peak internet traffic in the United States. And people keep consuming more and more video on these networks, including cellular networks. And it's not just magic the way that that works. I mean, these networks have to keep up with the exploding demand. And while traditionally we might have thought of these networks as kind of just pipes and the only way to go fix them is to have someone go in person and a technician and look at whatever problem that a customer is complaining about, software-defined networking could mean that all of that happens automatically, or it happens at the software level. It's virtual repairs and virtual upgrades that have nothing to do with someone digging up a street or replacing hardware.
You're absolutely right. Over 60% of our traffic today is video, and it's increasing rapidly. By really adopting this really exciting initiative of software-defined network and virtual network functions, it really allows us to have that type of flexibility so that the intelligence is now in the software. And we are able to spin up and change software in the old days. As we have to embark in changing our network, we would have to buy these custom devices, these custom physical devices, and it will take us weeks, months, years in some cases to make these type of upgrades in anticipating of capacity or change in our network. Today, as we are performing this software-defined network transformation, we are building software every day. We're making releases every day, every week, every month. We're able to expand our network, the capacity, the reach, the flexibility, the reliability of our network really at a fingertip. And that's the beauty of how software, the beauty of software that provides in this transformation.
And just to give listeners a sense of how big an undertaking this is, I mean, AT&T is a very large company, a successful company, a profitable company. There is some risk in deciding to do something like completely transitioning to a software-defined network, right? And I think the numbers that you had sent over was that, you know, currently it's around 5% of the network, you could say, is SDN, and that you're hoping to get to 30%, you know, fairly shortly. Just give listeners a sense of, you know, what it takes for a company to do something like this and how, you know, how, what's involved.
This is not an ordinary project. This is, I have been at the company for 25 years. This is the most exciting, challenging, and one of the largest projects we've ever undertaken from the technology side. We have 2,000 our brightest employees working on this project. When we started this a few years back, people didn't believe that it's even possible to take a network that has evolved and grown over decades and to really think like some the web companies do, that we're going to virtualize and transform this network into a software. So we took a big bet, and we had a target for ourselves, as you mentioned, Evan, last year of reaching 5%. And we actually exceeded the 5%. We have a very aggressive target of being able to transform our target network, to virtualize our target network in 2020 by 75%. We are not aware of any carrier of any sort worldwide who have come publicly making those type of claims. And we're making progress rapidly, and we're not waiting for 2020. We have a target that we have already publicized for this year of 30% virtualization. And that's just on the network functions. Once you start thinking about the services and the applications, really the sky's the limit here.
So now when we talk about big data being basically just, you had a blog post about software-defined networking and big data being like peanut butter and jelly. What do you mean by that? And how does big data relate to software-defined networking? Often when we think about big data, you know, there's so many different ways to think about it. There's surveillance, there's the government, you know, collecting data on citizens on a mass scale. There's advertising. There's companies like Google and Facebook collecting data so they can target ads to certain people. There's the medical profession where having more data, things like Fitbits, can kind of give a sense of people's habits and how better to predict health outcomes, but relate that to software-defined networking and why is it so important?
So as I mentioned earlier, software-defined network is about virtualizing our network and employing and transforming our traditional appliances into virtualized software, the routers and the switches and the firewalls, etc., running all of those on commodity hardware, cloud hardware, okay? Now, big data is about the science and the engineering of collecting the data and being able to analyze and making sense out of the data. Now, if you start thinking about this, is that we can go and virtualize our network and make it an intelligent software riding on a commodity hardware, the next question is going to come, well, what's going on this network? What's actually happening now? And what can I do to do better? And are there any traffic jams anywhere on this network? Do we need to optimize things differently? Do I need to move traffic from one place to the other? Is any of these virtualized routers going down? And now you start asking all these questions. And the answer for those for us is that you've got to get into the data wagon and being able to start bringing the data science and the data engineering into the SDN. And that's precisely what we have done. We have evolved our SDN strategy and created what we call the brain behind our domain two transformation that we refer to as ECOM. And their white paper on ECOM, which enhanced control, orchestration, management, and policy. That's really what it stands for. And ECOM, think of it as the management layer, the orchestration layer of this software-defined network. It's sort of the cockpit, okay? That's controlling this basically ecosystem. As part of e-com, we have started to develop and integrate big data. So now we are able to capture data from this network. We're able to figure out where are the traffic jams on this network and how can we automatically make this network self-healing, self-reliable, and self-learning. And what that means is that the ability to, so imagine you're configuring and architecting a city, and you know that for the past 7 years, your population has increased by 150,000%. And you know it's going to increase by 10 times by 2020. And so that you have a very difficult job at your hand to architect this city and being able to maneuver traffic and optimize the flow in a very efficient way. And the only way you can do that is through data. And so we're using data and SDN really together, as you mentioned earlier, as peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, they really go tightly together. The big data allows us to be the eyes and ears to know how to optimize and improve our network and best serve our customers.
And that's a really important point because there's a lot of frustration, obviously, when people feel like their internet is not working the way it's supposed to. And a lot of times they just assume, maybe I need to pay for more speed or, my internet provider is just screwing up. But it's really complicated. And that's why big data is important to figuring out why broadband might be slow or why there might be congestion. You know, when you go to watch a video and you get the buffering logo or the symbol, that could be for any number of reasons. It could be maybe you don't have a high enough speed. Maybe the provider of the video, like Netflix or Amazon, maybe they're having problems. Maybe it's a transit provider, a middleman who is trying to help bring the traffic. It could be all sorts of things. And I think, you know, customers are often just quick to blame, you know, either the service provider or the access provider, or they do a speed test on their computer. But it goes beyond that. And having big data to figure out where the congestion points are, you know, what is actually happening. This might be the first time that we can really say we know what's going on when there's a problem with the internet and we're not just, you know, fixing things on the margins. We could actually get to the heart of the issue. And this is a relatively new thing. And is it fair to say that for a while when things weren't working properly, it was kind of hard to know why? It was hard to be able to explain to people why their internet wasn't working or why the video wasn't loading because, you know, the internet just kind of worked the way it did, and we didn't know that much about it.
There are obviously many, many challenges when you are trying to scale this ecosystem. And there are many explanations to why sometimes a failure happened. What we are trying to make sure is that as we are expanding this network and as the demand from our customers are increasing and rapidly increasing, we want to make sure we're providing reliable, secure and scalable network, not just on average, but for the individuals, the personalized individuals. It is a difficult problem because this network has to be intelligent and smart in the sense that to be able to predict that Evan is going to be watching a large number of videos in the next 2 hours and be able to sort of us to have a way to shift bandwidth and to shift our network to enable Evans to get the best experience in the next 1 hour. Now, think about managing that ecosystem going forward. Think about how the demand of our businesses and our consumers change. We don't have a spreadsheet. We don't have a spreadsheet that says Evan needs to be using videos in the next 1 hour, shift bandwidth to Evan. And such a business need to do X, Y, and Z. They're making an announcement in a couple of hours. They need more traffic. The beauty about this software-defined network and the intelligence layer we are adding, which is e-com, and adding big data as part of that, is that we need to predict those events. And we need to predict it in such a way that Evans gets the best experience whenever he wants, wherever he wants. It's not an easy problem. It's not an easy task. That's why it's never been done before. But AT&T have put this big bet a couple of years back. We're way into this journey. We're way into our target. And frankly, what we are seeing, Evan, we started this journey And we knew this was an aggressive big bet to take for AT&T. And what we are seeing today is a lot of our partners and our competitors are starting to join us in this transformation. And that's really very exciting, Walt.
Yeah, that is really the positive. That the main benefit to consumers is increased competition. And when one company takes a big risk, takes a big gamble, puts a lot of money to invest in something that may or may not work out, and the consequences could be huge, that's exciting. And especially when there's so many uncertainties about the market and where regulation is going, it's exciting to see a company do something like that. And especially when you induce your competitors to do the same, then it benefits the entire marketplace. Now, we've talked a little bit about some of the basic benefits, or, you know, basic to an in relative terms, to software-defined networking, you know, having the network conduct repairs automatically, you know, not having to send technicians. We talked about meeting demand. So a consumer might not notice how, you know, huge it is that the network was able to just keep up with the exploding demand. But are there other, you know, benefits that consumers might see? You know, what is software-defined networking going to look like to the end user? And are there customers of AT&T who might experience changes in a positive way when, you know, you go from 5% to 30%, or when you finally get to 75% virtual? Can you talk about some of the real world, you know, implications for end users and what they can come to expect from this huge undertaking?
So that's a very good question. I'll give you the example today, even of some of our business customers, as we're starting to roll out these services. And then I'll talk about even consumers and other services we're offering to consumers here. From a technology side, what we have done, we have basically taking hardware all mixed and intermingled with software, and we have separated the two. We have now put the software as an intelligent layer that can ride on any commodity hardware. Well, what has that done for our business customers? I'll give you the example of Network On Demand, or some of the newer services we're announcing, like Network Function On Demands and others. What we've done, we've allowed our business customers not to make an order, wait weeks and months for their service to be installed. And those are large companies. Some of them are medium-sized companies, small companies. They are serving consumers themselves. They could be in the energy sector. They could be in the entertainment sector. They could be in many different sectors. But they used to have to wait weeks and months for them to have their service up. Now what we are doing with this software-defined network for these business customers who are serving consumers, we're now, like I said, allowing them to control that management layer, and allowing them to create a service, customize a service, and deploy that service on their own. And so now what you're thinking about is that instead of taking days, weeks, and months, in some cases, to create and deploy one service, now what we're doing that in the order of you know, hours and days, and in some cases, a week or two. That's a major transformation to the industry. What that means is that now, not only these business customers are serving their consumers faster and better and enabling applications so quickly that they couldn't have done before, but also in terms of our partners as well. We've gone from very sort of one particular centric solution that we offer to the market, and really sort of increase the competitive landscape, and said, we're going to provide a white label hardware. Okay, that's what we're doing, for example, for Network On Demand and others, and said, but there are different businesses. There are small businesses who also want to play in this game, and there are large businesses. And we want those businesses to be able to have their software running on our network, and we let our customers, our end customers, decide what software they feel is the best one, best suited for their environment. So now, not only we are transforming AT&T and our network and our customers, we're truly transforming that entire ecosystem that includes our partners, our suppliers, our competitors, and it's the whole ecosystem is changing.
And is this going to lead to potentially more customization at the end user level and more kind of control over someone's internet experience? I mean, we often talk about on the show how customers pretty much, they buy internet, they subscribe to some services, and they just kind of work, and there's not really a control panel where customers can, you know, turn up one service or turn down another service or kind of make changes that might benefit them. Do you see software-defined networking leading to more control, more granular control over someone's internet experience? You know, deciding, hey, I want to route more bandwidth to this service, or I want less bandwidth to that service, and kind of really managing your internet experience. Whereas right now, aside from a few applications, you know, Netflix has a tool on smartphones, but, you know, people really just have services, they grab as much bandwidth as they can, and it's not really that intelligent of an experience. So will SDN lead to that type of environment where consumers are really in the cockpit, as you said earlier?
No, you're absolutely right. It exactly precisely does and provide that personalization. And it does it in a way that you could do it rapidly and you have the flexibility of doing that. Today in the lab, okay, in my lab, I'm able to really stitch together a number of different network functions, virtualized network functions. I can take a number of different routers and a number of different firewalls and switches and many other virtualized appliances. I can stitch them. I can create a service. I can deploy that service in my network, in my lab network, and just do that in a matter of minutes. That's what I can do. That's never been done type of, that kind of approach has never been done before. And we are making a lot of progress in that. And we are starting, you know, in the future, allowing our customers to customize, to build those services and also customize those services. And it goes beyond just designing the service, okay? It also includes the reliability of that service, include the security of that service. Once you're getting into software-defined network, we believe and we are working on trying to really transform our security service so that we are able to more quickly and intelligently adapt to this intelligent new network to ensure that we are able to address attacks quicker before an end consumer would experience a degradation to their services and application. We're also going one step further and saying, now you have this cool software virtualized network. Well, how is this going to transform the industry who are building applications and services? How is this going to transform the connected car? How is this going to transform the Internet of Things? How is it going to transform the medical industry? And so we're starting to work on a lot of these newer initiatives to try to figure out how this foundation that we are creating that allows the flexibility, the reliability, the security going to impact, you know, the upper layer, which is the applications and services.
And that's a really important point. And one of the reasons I was excited to have you on the show today to talk about this is because there is this notion, I think, that innovation only happens at the edge. And part of that is because, you know, the whole Silicon Valley image is of applications. It's about, you know, innovation happens when, you know, I update an app on my phone and the features have improved or the layout has been changed or they fixed a bug or things like that. You know, it seems, you know, consumers might think, you know, innovation means apps, and it doesn't mean that the underlying infrastructure is also innovating. And this is kind of like behind the scenes innovation. You know, you talk about it, we talk about it, but it's, you know, software defined networking isn't really the face of what's going on in Silicon Valley right now. And it's an important point because you don't want to make assumptions that just because a company has been around for a while that they're not innovating. And that just because it's a large company that has a long established network and a lot of customers that they can't innovate too. And I think there are people who assume that, you know, innovation only happens at the edge and that the internet is merely a means or broadband is merely a means for those edge companies to innovate. But this is exciting stuff because this could really be even more transformative than having a new app or a new social media platform taking off. This could improve your entire broadband experience. And unless, you know, people like you come on the podcast to talk about it, customers might not even notice that this is going on. So if there's one thing I want listeners to take away from this episode is that innovation happens all over the place, all sectors of the economy. And it's really important to recognize that when, you know, internet traffic increases 150,000%, that doesn't just happen magically. And that there are people working around the clock. You said 2,000 people working to virtualize the network to make it work better. And that, you know, AT&T is just one company that's taking this massive undertaking, and it's going to affect other aspects of the other companies in the market, other aspects of the economy. So just don't take these things for granted and recognize that it requires investment. It requires risk-taking. It requires some really smart people doing some really amazing things. And don't just think that innovation is your app store. It's also the incredible network that allows other companies to be successful. Now, are there any other things, parting thoughts you wanted to talk about? We're obviously going to do a lot of other episodes on this. There's so many things to unpack. Like you said, the Internet of Things, the connected car. But in terms of just giving listeners a taste of what's going on here, are there anything else you want to say before we end the show?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that we're very excited about this transformation. It's a journey we started a few years back, and we're learning a lot every day. And it's allowing us to really create a more resilient, smarter, and intelligent network. We're starting to embed new technologies into this network that we've never even felt it's possible before. We're starting to put new machine learning type of technologies and artificial intelligence type of technologies to allow us to predict behaviors, predict degradations before they happen, okay? We're starting to do a lot of very smart things along with our partners and our ecosystem all coming together. We're starting to play a big role in the open source industry. You know, we cannot do this alone. It's impossible for us to do this alone. This is a family that we are. This is a journey we are taking, but we are really bringing an ecosystem together as one family to drive this forward. And one of our biggest drivers, we're driving on open source. There's tremendous innovations that we are leveraging from open source, and we are publishing to open source. I'll give you an example. The big data part that I just talked about, which is part of the SDN, that big data software platform that we are delivering as part of SDN, about two-thirds of that software platform is open source. There's a lot of new innovations and technologies in that, embedded in that. And the technologies are changing rapidly. That's the beauty about this world, is that every day newer technologies are coming and a better ways of doing and building applications. And as Internet of Things become more and more mainstreams, where every device, every appliance, everything is connected, you can imagine the sheer traffic of being able to coordinate all these devices and all these autonomous cars, and how the network, the smartness of that network is going to be so vital, okay, to be able to manage this larger ecosystem. It's very exciting. It's exciting for those who are working on big data, working on networking, working on machine learning and artificial intelligence, working on orchestration. When you think about it, there is nothing that you're working on today that's not part of this major transformation.
Well, there's so many exciting things that are going on, and we'll definitely be doing more shows. And today we focused on, you know, the technological aspect and the investment, but of course there are policy questions, and you know, this is a tech policy podcast that we'll be discussing in future episodes. You know, something like software-defined networking really raises questions about net neutrality, the way that broadband is regulated, Internet of Things, all of these areas that policymakers need to tackle. But as they, you know, go through the motions and figure out what the best policies are, you know, this is already happening. The train is leaving the station and it's going, whether or not whatever Washington does, this is happening. And we'll certainly look forward to talking about automation, artificial intelligence, and things like that. But that's it for today's show. My guest has been Mazen Gilbert, Assistant Vice President of Intelligent Systems and Platform Research at AT&T Labs. Mazen, thanks so much for taking us through this exciting topic.
My pleasure, and thank you for the invitation, Evan.
And before we go, I know that there's an exciting event coming up that you wanted to mention. It's called Shape Festival. Tell our listeners about Shape Festival, how they can attend, get involved.
So, yes, we are holding a really exciting event on July 15th and 16th next week in San Francisco. You could go to shape.att.com, and we have a lot of information about Some of the announcements we're making on software-defined network, on Internet of Things. There are a number of hackathons we are also having at that event. There are a lot of really exciting and great presentations being presented by some pioneers in the industry. It's really an exciting event that we hold annually. Really highly recommend this in San Francisco next week.
Great. Well, we will link to that in the show notes, and that's shape.att.com, shape as in shapeshifter. And we'll make sure that listeners get that info and we'll tweet about it. So definitely check out that event. And if you're interested in this topic, definitely go to that. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Let us know what you think of the show. Send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. Feel free to let us know what you think of a particular episode, guests you like, topics you want to hear. Find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review because it will help others find the show. And thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.